B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Tuesday, February 20th, 2018. Took a day off for the President's holiday. Wended my way up to the Napa Valley where there's a bumper crop of mustard growing. And it was nice to relax a little bit, disconnect from the internets and all of the Russiagate hysteria. So on Friday, as you know, Robert Mueller, the special counsel, unveiled 13 indictments of Russian individuals and named three companies and accused them of a scheme to manipulate American public opinion using social media. And predictably, it produced results such as President Trump tweeting, we can't even keep count of how many tweets he fired off over the weekend. But he is clearly quite obsessed with the whole Russiagate scandal. You can imagine his future as president relies on that. And so he's claiming that it showed that there was no collusion, there was no coordination with anybody on the Trump campaign in the United States, at least not intentionally. And that is spelled out in Mueller's indictment. So Trump selectively took from it what he wants. And likewise, on the left, those who support the Trump-Russia collusion narrative, they were just dancing with glee. Rachel Maddow canceled a weekend getaway with her partner Susan so she could go on the air and report to the nation on Friday night about these stunning indictments that prove it all. And what she did was take the indictments, which have some evidence but are not proof, they are not proven in a court of law, they are charges. 44 minutes into her program, she acknowledged that, well, none of these Russians will actually come to the United States and face trial. And so this is theater. This is Robert Mueller writing a screenplay. And we don't know where the next chapters lead. But this one was intended to say, see, Russia meddled in the American election. 80 individuals, a monthly budget of $1 million to $1.2 million, based in St. Petersburg, cranking out Facebook posts and some Facebook ads. And one legitimate view of this is that it is a commercial clickbait operation. I love to tell the story about the American individual who generated the fake news that Trump had been endorsed by Pope Francis. And while many people thought that was some kind of a Russian plot, turned out to be an unemployed college graduate in Maryland or Virginia who had tried exploiting Clinton for clickbait but found he got further with Trump. And Scott Shane is the guy who discovered that blogger or that clickbait operator here in the United States. Scott Shane writes for the New York Times. I've talked with him a few times. I don't claim to know him well, but I've followed his byline for many years, and I have some respect for his work as a reporter. Not so much on Russiagate. But I want to be fair because Scott Shane has delivered some of the caveats, these lines that are buried in the middle of a lengthy article. And a year ago, he published one of those where he said, and by the way, we're still waiting for some kind of evidence to support the claims of the intelligence communities about this alleged Russian plot. Well, for Saturday's paper, Scott Shane wrote one of the articles about the Mueller indictments and the Influence America operation. Then on Sunday, they published a lengthy piece by Shane in the Sunday Review. That's the op-ed section of the New York Times. The headline reads, America Meddles in Elections, Too. And Scott Shane offered some refreshing and much-needed history and context. And he quotes a Carnegie Mellon scholar who looked at elections between 1946 and 2000. And found that 81 had been interfered in by the U.S. of A. and 36 by the Soviet Union and or Russia. So once again, we're number one, right? Number one election meddler in the world by far. And by cutting it off at 2000, the professor did not include our meddling in Ukraine, in Iraq, in Gaza, in Afghanistan, in Egypt, in Russia, yes, Russia, Haiti, Honduras. And so the record is very clear. But Americans don't acknowledge our own cyber warfare offensive going on every day. We don't acknowledge, or if we do, we chalk it up to American exceptionalism that it's okay for us to interfere in other people's elections, or even foment coups or kill elected leaders. Because we're always doing the right thing, we're always supporting the right people. And that canard is something we have to come to grips with here. Because the left is so obsessed with the Trump-Russia story that I believe the many people have lost all context and perspective. And then today, Scott Shane, after showing some balance and objectivity in the Sunday paper, by Tuesday, he's back at it. How unwitting Americans encountered Russian operatives online. And he tells actual stories of Americans who claim that they were suspicious of Facebook posts, a pastor in Baltimore who couldn't believe that some group from the outside wanted to stage a rally there, and he communicated back and forth with what we now think was a Russian operator in St. Petersburg. Scott Shane reports that Facebook has disclosed that about 130 rallies were promoted by 13 of the Russian Facebook pages. And he notes that it reached 126 million Americans. Those are impressions, right? And that means that some of those impressions were repeated on the same individuals. And as to the turnout for these rallies, later in the article he says a dozen people turned out for an event. This one was near Houston. Now, that's a joke. And a dozen people fell for a joke or a ruse. And buried in here comes the honest Scott Shane. The numbers are modest against the background of the entire presidential campaign, but they show that the Russians were able not to just attract Americans to their ersatz groups, but actually manipulate their actions. And so, what does this mean? Well, people struggle to try to understand all this, and as we continue, we'll give you some comments from people who are reacting to this. But there's another thought I want to introduce here, and that is we've now become a nation of bot watchers. And as you may know, I'm kind of allergic to Twitter. I think it's pretty stupid, actually. But people like it, and I offer the First Amendment right of anyone to tweet as much as they want. At any rate, today the New York Times is telling us that Twitter accounts suspected of links to Russia released hundreds of posts right after the school shooting in Parkland, Florida last week, and these are taking up both sides of the gun control debate. Now, last week I told you about Politico's forensic look at the Release the Memo hashtag and how Politico claimed without any evidence that that's what pushed Trump to actually release the memo. And so I can't tell you who's responsible for these tweets. It may be Russian bots. But then we get the story from Newsweek that the alt-right bot network that took down Al Franken was based in Japan. They've done some Twitter forensics. A pair of Japan-based websites created the day before, Leanne Tweeden, the woman who claimed that Franken had groped her, before she went public, the very day before, this website was created in Japan. And the article infers that Roger Stone, the longtime Republican dirty tricks operative who worked for Nixon and more recently for Trump, that he orchestrated this. Now, I can't speak to the Twitter part, but when I saw the news about Al Franken, the Leanne Tweeden photos, the pile on by others, it was clearly an orchestrated effort. And so this suggests that the Twitter bots working for the right wing this time were based in Japan. And I point this out because the stolen hacking tools from the NSA, the Vault 7 collection, include gizmos that allow you to interfere, to hack, and to lay a trail that leads to somebody else. So were the Al Franken Twitter bots working for Russia or Japan or Roger Stone or Judge Roy Moore? He, of course, was the one who was looking for a distraction, trying to find a neener, neener, neener Democrat to say, look, I'm not the only one with, sexual improprieties in my history. So, consider all this recent hysteria now about bots. And Philip Bump, mainstream journalist at the Washington Post, wrote an interesting piece. I've linked to all these in the show file for today's podcast. Click away. He writes, over the past several weeks, automated social media accounts powered by Russian actors have been blamed for driving the push to release the memo, forcing Al Franken from office, flooding the public conversation in the wake of a mass shooting at a Florida high school. Oh, and then he adds number four, Special Counsel Mueller announced federal charges targeting Russian individuals who engaged in deceptive online activity during and after the 2016 campaign. Bump says the problem is that it is alarmist both as presented and to a lesser extent as reported. There simply isn't any evidence that bots linked to the Russian government had or have a significant effect on the U.S. political conversation. So let them tweet. Because I don't think most Americans are that stupid or that gullible. And Bump goes on to say, reading the ads included in Mueller's indictment and looking at other ads released by Facebook, it's hard to come away with the sense that these were decision makers for many voters. It's often hard to measure the effectiveness of political advertising, but these ads seem particularly mediocre. If your goal is to mix things up and frustrate people, the bar for success is lower. The Pew Research Center measured political animosity in June of 2016 and found that more than 4 in 10 partisans viewed members of the other party as a threat to the United States. And Trump was the most divisive candidate in my lifetime. Do Russian-controlled Twitter bots actually rise above the level of background noise generated by Americans to the point that they have an impact? And then when we get to the numbers are always exaggerated. They talk about here hundreds of thousands of dollars in your... Oh, I'm sorry. That's the wrong story. I'm jumping from one page to the next here. Data released by the House Intelligence Committee show that Russian ads were viewed only 340,000 times in the last month of the campaign. There were 231 million monthly active Facebook users in North America, in the fourth quarter of 2016, meaning that perhaps 0.1% of users saw Russian ads that month. And then we have to look at how many of the people who actually saw those ads actually voted. So this is highly exaggerated. And today, I conducted an in-depth interview with Aaron Matei. He writes for The Nation magazine, where he's published a series of articles since last October, challenging in a skeptical way and demanding evidence for the Russiagate narrative. And in my conversation with Aaron Matei, he says he'll continue to dig for evidence and follow it, but it appears that this is all based on the embarrassment of Democrats and pundits that Trump won.
Well, that's what all this is about. It's about this foundation of American exceptionalism that so many people in the elite political and media culture buy into. They saw that upended a little bit when a reality TV a crude reality TV show host, managed to defeat the candidate favored by the majority of the establishment. And everything about Trump that he said on the campaign trail that went against the conventional Washington line has been the target of a pretty intense campaign, since he won, including his call for friendly relations with Russia. Now, whether or not Trump meant any of what he said back in the campaign when he talked about, you know, when he criticized Hillary Clinton for her interventions abroad, when he talked about helping the working class and the forgotten worker, whether he actually meant that is up for debate. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that he's simply conned everybody with a better sense of what people – with what average voters wanted to hear. And then, of course, got into office and did everything opposite to what he promised. But part of this is, I think, the reason why this Russian narrative has taken such a foothold. It was because just members of the elite who lost to Trump were just so shocked by his loss and so embarrassed that they lost to him, in the Democratic Party, at least.
I'm releasing the full interview with Aaron Matei to my subscribers today at peterbcollins.com, at Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, iTunes. And I hope you'll take a listen. I think Aaron Matei is a bright young journalist, and he's doing a great job fighting to do evidence-based reporting on the whole Russia scheme. And my podcasts are made possible by listeners like you who support my work with your subscriptions. People like Casey Condon, Tracy Williams, Bill Goodacre, and Jim McHugh. They're monthly subscribers, and you can join in too. You got an extra $5 a month you could kick my way? All right, if you answered yes, visit peterbcollins.com, find the menu tab, click it, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber, it takes you to the sign-up page, and you can make a choice that's comfortable for you and your budget and give me the boost that I need here at pbc.com. Well, Mueller has succeeded in dividing the Trump administration because we saw the spooks last week dancing around this, saying, yeah, Russia's going to meddle in the upcoming midterm elections. They were off script, according to Trump. And then the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, over the weekend at the Munich Security Conference, responding to a question, he said, as you can see with the FBI indictment, the evidence is now really incontrovertible and available in the public domain. This makes it tough for the dear tweeter to find support. And when he hit the Twitter thing this weekend, one of the things he did was blame Obama. He quotes Obama from a news conference in October of 2016. Quote, there's no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections, and there's no evidence that that has happened in the past or that it will happen this time. So I'd invite Mr. Trump to stop whining and make his case to get votes. Now, at this point, Obama had been privy to intelligence warnings. In early October, the Director of National Intelligence issued a kind of vague statement about Russian interference in the election. And while I'm loath to agree with Trump on absolutely anything, I've been asking for a long time. If Obama truly believed that Russia was meddling in our elections, why didn't he stop it? Why didn't he expose what he knew when he knew it? Why didn't he declassify information that had been made available to him? We know that the Democrats went to the Republican counterparts, and Mitch McConnell said that he would not support disclosure of this. And we're told that Obama kept quiet because he thought it would appear to favor Hillary in the election, and that that could cause things to go sideways. Was it only a miscalculation? Politically? I don't know. But it bears asking the question. And once again, Trump has stumbled onto something that may provide him with some comfort or at least diversion from the onslaught that he faces. I want to take a moment to praise the students from Parkland High School. I'll be providing deeper coverage of the issues of gun regulation, but I really am just touched by the way they have spoken up, spoken out, challenged Trump, the leadership in Florida over the incredible weak gun laws there. And this could be a moment that I would certainly love to see. where the NRA and the people it owns on Capitol Hill are forced to make some significant change. Going back into the history book, somebody posted this on my Facebook feed. A Guardian article from 2011, March 17th. Quote, the U.S. military is developing software that will let it secretly manipulate social media sites by using fake online personas to influence internet conversations and spread pro-American propaganda. A California corporation was awarded a contract to set up what is described as an online persona management service that will allow one U.S. serviceman or woman to control up to 10 separate identities based all over the world. The contract stipulates that each fake online persona must have a convincing background history and supporting details, and that up to 50 U.S.-based controllers should be able to operate false identities from their workstations, quote, without fear of being discovered by sophisticated adversaries. Interesting commentary at Salon under the byline of Sophia McLennan. She writes, the Russia election investigation is important, but it's not everything. And she's inclined to believe, more than I do, I guess. But she says, this is the Benghazi of the left, and the obsession is dangerous. She cites five reasons. Russia was not the only factor in the 2016 election. Propaganda is distracting us from any kind of policy issues. And also that it was policy and not propaganda that decided the election. People concerned about jobs and the economy, etc. She warns to beware of a McCarthyism of the left, worries that we will all turn into Alex Jones, and says that fantasizing about Trump's impeachment doesn't help us prepare for what's next. And underneath all of this, my lefty friends expect that impeachment is right around the corner, right? We got all the evidence that's been proven. The case is closed. But where are the Democratic leaders? They are poo-pooing impeachment. They're keeping it off the table. They don't want it to be a part of the 2018 election rhetoric. And I think that that could lead to another loss for the Democrats that'll probably be blamed on Russians. Over at Consortium News, my friends Ray McGovern and Bill Binney co-authored a piece warning us that Trump has altered the U.S. Nuclear Posture Review. And the revised edition of this says that we are going to reduce the standard for using nuclear weapons. We're going to have some low-yield nuclear weapons. And that responding to cyber attacks would be a reason to use nuclear weapons, according to the Trump Nuclear Posture Review. And this is pretty scary. They point out that false flag attacks have occurred and that the WikiLeaks release of the cyber tools in Vault 7 showed what I mentioned earlier, that you can fake the origin of a hack, an attack, a document, what have you. And so when they say they know that it was Russia, that's not really true. Unless, of course, they provide some proof, and that so far hasn't happened. Over at The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald, who so far has ducked the meat of the Mueller indictments, and, you know, he may be getting around to that, he wrote a piece published yesterday. A consensus emerges. Russia committed an act of war on par with Pearl Harbor and 9/11. And he asks, are these people really talking about a military response to cyber warfare? And he cites many voices, Democrats and Republicans. And he asks, if Russian election meddling is on par with Pearl Harbor and 9/11, then should the U.S. response be on par with the response to those attacks? That's where the rhetoric is leading us right now. And some of the most vociferous, like Gerald Nadler, the congressman from New York, are on, nominally, the left. David Leonhardt tries to simplify it in his op-ed in the Times today, stating, unproven elements as fact? He says, let's make this simple. One, Russia attacked the United States in 2016 by disrupting the presidential election. No, I don't agree. Number two, the origin of the attack is a matter of consensus among American intelligence agencies. That's not proof. Number three, the current president refuses to acknowledge the attack. And then in the wake of the mass murder of 17 Americans in Florida, the president claimed the FBI failed to prevent the massacre because it's too occupied with the Russia investigation. So based on that, Leonhardt cites his New York Times buddy, Tom Friedman. This is Code Red. The biggest threat to the integrity of our democracy today is in the Oval Office. This is the kind of superheated language that is leading a lot of people to the wrong conclusion here. And we could end up with a huge mess that doesn't even lead to impeachment, that just leads to a kind of gridlock that could make us vulnerable. And then what will the hawks do? An item in today's Washington Post notes that Saudi Arabia is continuing to seek contractors to build a couple of nuclear power reactors in desolate stretches of the desert along the Persian Gulf. And I mention this because this was one of the things that Mike Flynn appeared to be scheming about when he was on his way to becoming National Security Advisor during the transition in December and January, when he got nailed for talking to the Russians and then lying about it. Underlying it was this scheme that involved Jared Kushner and many others to get these big contracts from the Saudis using Russian bankers to finance the construction of nuclear power reactors in Saudi Arabia. And Crown Prince Mohammed BL, what is his the rest of his name here? Bin Salman, MBS. He's visiting the United States in March. He's going to take a meeting with Westinghouse, which badly wants the contract to build one or both of the reactors, and they're claiming that U.S. non-proliferation agreements stand in the way of their profit-taking. In Sunday's New York Times, I was pleasantly surprised. A lovely article, mostly sympathetic, I haven't read the whole thing, but what I browsed, about the valve turners. And as you may know, I interviewed Michael Foster and his colleague, Emily. I don't have Emily's last name in front of me right now. But they were here in the Bay Area. I interviewed them. Michael Foster was sentenced to 1 year in jail with 2 years suspended because he cut a chain link fence, then cut off a padlock, and cranked a valve to shut down the Keystone pipeline. And he did it intentionally because he said he's more afraid of climate change than he is of a stretch in prison. And over in my birth state of Ohio, Dennis Kucinich is running for governor. The former congressman, presidential candidate, the guy with the idea for a Department of Peace. Well, he has staked out a really powerful position. He wants to ban all fracking and oil and gas extraction in the Buckeye State. I fully support this. When I grew up there, we didn't have earthquakes in Ohio. And Kucinich said fresh water and clean water are not negotiable issues. He said he would deploy the Ohio State Highway Patrol to stop and turn away vehicles that carry fracking waste. And under a Kucinich governorship, Ohio would give subsidized health screens to residents living near fracking sites, and the data would be used to file a class action lawsuit against fracking companies similar to how states took big tobacco to court in the 1990s. Right on, Dennis. I hope Ohio voters will rally to his support. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast all the way to the end here. We post it on YouTube, and you can click subscribe when you're there, will you? I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you. Until we meet again, happy trails to you. Keep smiling.